Item number one on the agenda is a rezoning for 350 Lodge Avenue under file DAZ-237 of 2008.
Hey, I believe there's a few. This is Ray. Ray, you wanted to speak first, Ray Juan. And sit down anytime you're ready.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. The application is to deal with the previous Silver High School site that the school division has carried out an RFP, and our client, Green Tree Homes, is a successful candidate to be considered for the redevelopment of that particular piece of property. The site itself is bounded by Lodge, and on east and west side are the existing back lane, and the south side is the existing playfield for the previous school. We're dealing with the northern half of the property. The intention of our client, Green Tree Home, is to look at more an infill housing project, a lower density infill housing project, but because of the building height per se, in compacting the multifamily building into two buildings, we're asking for the property to be rezoned at RMFM. That's primarily to deal with the height issue and not the density issue. Under the RMFM, based on the planner's report, the maximum density can go up to 403 units in total. In this case, we're proposing a total of 132 units. So it's about one-third of what the maximum density can be, will be allowed under the RMFM. And not all the buildings are four-story building. If you look at the site plan, I can walk you through that later on. But just to give you a little bit of background of the history, our client and ourselves have carried out a total of three public open houses. The very first one I didn't attend, but the very first one is basically to fill up everybody in the neighborhood, advising the neighborhood the intention of the redevelopment of the properties. Input has been received. There is a survey been done. I believe the planner's department has a copy of the survey. And subsequently to that, just before Christmas, we carry out two more additional open house within the area and receive a lot of positive and very constructive inputs. Just to give you a little bit of background, at the beginning, if you can't hear me, say so and I'll stand closer to the mic. The very first proposal that we have came up with has the four-story building towards the south end, and the north end are all single-family, either fourplex or the quads, which is the four units side-by-side, bungalow style, and the side-by-side fourplex, a two-story building. So the majority of the site was proposed to be very compatible to the existing adjacent neighborhood, other than the four-story building on the south side that abut to a portion of the back lane on both east and west orientation, and the south to the playfield. And the setback fulfilled the criteria based on the RMF, the 25 feet setback to the edge of the building. And the proposal is to have all traffic internally in and out on Lodge only, so we don't spill traffic onto the existing backlink. That was some of the concern that we had received in the very first meeting. Subsequent to that, when we have the open house, there was concern about the four-story building too close to the neighborhood and the density, and again, I can only comment and say we're only building one-third of what RMFM will allow, 132 units instead of over 400 units that are permitted. But based on that comment that we have received, there are two major comments that we have received at those two open houses that I consider very major is the consideration of not having the four-story building abut to any single-family housing, and also try to orient the building, the single-family houses, the fourplex or the duplexes, not having the backyard facing Lodge, more a presentation onto Lodge. The next plan I'll show you is more a color rendition of the concept plan. Same plan. A lot of technical information has been removed, so you can see more clear the gray areas of the driveway. And the parking well exceed what the minimum requirements are. Internally, we have single parking enclosed, and a tandem parking right on the driveway. And the roadway within the development is wide enough that you can do parking along the street here. So we're not imposing additional visitor parking onto the existing neighborhood by parking on Lodge, or occasional people may park on the back lane. So we felt we have been addressing the traffic issue, the parking issues, to a certain degree, the massing issue, but we do have a four-story building abut to a minimal amount of...
This is the second roundabout where you made some changes to it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, this is the very first round. This is the very first round. I'm just trying to give everybody some background in terms of what we have presented to the public before, and subsequent to the two public open outs, we have taken the input that we have received from the public, the neighbors. We came up with... come up with an alternative solution here, which is what you will see, a very similar version of the planner's report, but the four-story building is internal. The perimeter of the entire property on three sides are either duplexes or bungalows. In this case, we have bungalows sitting along Lodge and the side elevation, which is the front entrance coming into one of the units and two of the units along Lodge. So we remove this condition of having backyard backing onto Lodge. The same concept of driving around the site internally, no access onto the backlink, but the four-story building are internal now. So they're not abut to any single family housing that are existing. And the distance from the edge, the far edge over here, is 71 meters from here to the property line.
Which is about 124 feet, and 154 from here to the back lane. What was it in the initial drawings that you had, or the initial plan? 25 feet?
Yes.
And now it's gone to 154 and 124. Okay.
And again, they're not abut to any single family housing now. The in-between are duplexes, two-story single family homes.
Houses that are right along the edges for Rita and Ainsley, you're saying?
The back lane.
There will be one located in the back lane and the backyard of the new duplexes.
Okay. So they're not any higher, I guess, than the housing that's...
No, it won't be. In fact, we've done a shadow map based on the previous design over here. And as you know, we have been working with the City of Winnipeg on a different committee, what the so-called infill housing guideline, a proposed infill housing guideline. It's not a bylaw or nothing, but it's a study. Even based on the previous development, having the four-story building about 25 feet, we fulfilled the criteria of the infill housing guideline, per se, by setting it back 25 feet. But we're proposing a minimum 124.
I'm not sure this is a question for you or our planner, but how do they come up with the guidelines? These are guidelines they use kind of nationally, is that?
Yeah, like other cities have these for these types of development where there's infill opportunities in lower density neighborhoods. And the City of Winnipeg has some secondary plans for specific neighborhoods, but when we don't have, when there is no secondary plan, then there's not as much policy as we could have to draw on as some of the other cities have. So the planning department has investigated developing its own guidelines and has looked into what some other cities have done. And I've had some consultations with politicians, developers, a whole range of people and groups that have come up with a draft report. But it has no status at this point. I think it's to come in before council sometime mid-2009 is the guess. But it's designed to, you know, in the absence of policy, to create some guidelines. And as Ray is suggesting, one of the guidelines is just saying that, you know, taller buildings can mesh with the existing as long as they, at the very least, and this is just as a starting point, meet a minimum requirement, and that's if you draw a 45 degree angle line from the back property line, draw a 45 degree angle up, the building should be well within that. And even at the 40 feet, 25 feet away from the property line, it achieved that. But again, that's a very minimum. That would sort of be the first thing that we would look at. Taking that, and they've moved it back 125 feet.
I just received a copy of the planner's report, and one of the conditions of the approval is to, which is item 1.6, on page 12, it talks about no building shall be greater than 40 feet. I'd like to know where the 40 feet come from.
The 40 feet came from a meeting that I had with you and Guard Speak about complaint enforcement. Is there a difference in?
No, I just want to refresh my memory when where that 40 feet come from. Yep. That's the background, and the last drawing that you have seen over here, the part of the presentation, this was drawn based on the previous concept, looking at the building from the southwest corner. That's the quality of the building we're proposing to do. Is not the
structural nature of what you're proposing hasn't changed. You're saying with the
hasn't changed.
It's
the location of the structure got changed, and the short side is facing the park instead of the long side.
You have a question, Councillor Clement?
Yeah. No, on that drawing over here, the second drawing, where is that 40 feet measured from? The ground up? That drawing there. Here? You just said about talking about a 40-foot height to that four-story building.
Ground to the top of the roof.
It's ground to the top?
Yeah.
And the residential properties on the perimeter?
Those?
Yeah.
Those will be a conventional two-story duplexes.
What are they allowed?
What are they allowed? That's right.
What are they? Well, in the RMFM, they'd be allowed. The maximum height is 50 feet, but we'd reduce that. But in
I think Councillor Clement meant the
residential
housing on Ainslie or Rita.
On Ainslie and Rita,
yeah.
They are R1L. They are a maximum 35 feet in the bylaw. Yeah.
That's what the comparison over here, Councillor Clement. The dark box over here in front, that's the 35 feet. The previous proposed building is 43 feet to the top of the parapet.
Okay.
That's just a demonstration.
I was just trying to get, but so the bottom line is, I mean, if this is all residential, houses that would be backing onto those streets could be 35 feet high, and this building in the middle is only going to be 40, so it's only 5 feet higher than what any housing would be allowed in any case. So the height isn't really much of.
And by accepting the input that we have received from the public, we look at alternatives after the open house. We accept the comments and see how we can better improve the concepts. And you can see how we evolve from one concept to the last that we go through and different that are addressing the issues that have been raised.
And those 40-foot heights are, you said, 125 feet from the lot line?
120. And what about the other side? What about Rita?
Yeah.
The other building, the property line.
So if you were standing in the back lane, you wouldn't even see those buildings.
It'll be a slit on top of the other houses, or in between houses.
Well, yeah.
And all the housing in the latest version of the plan, you're saying they're duplexes. They're going to be two stories.
Yeah.
Like which ones are two
duplexes.
Stories and which ones are?
These are all two story. These are all duplexes based on current plan. The intention is to create a mix of housing. You've got duplexes.
So the ones in the front are bungalow, you're saying?
This is a bungalow, a long lodge, in two groups of four.
Okay.
We call the fourplex,
right.
The model four. The intention of our client is to create a mix of different types of housing so that people like seniors can come here and use the bungalow so they don't need to fight with the stairs. You've got younger families that prefer to have two-story homes. They'll be over here. Or you get younger people that are startup, or some senior people that are more snowbirds. Those are more the multi-story building. So you get a mix of three different kinds of housing within one site.
And the units in the four stories are condos?
Yes.
Okay.
They are.
They're not rentals?
They're not rentals.
Okay. Which are the rentals? Just the big buildings?
These are all condos.
Everything's condo.
What is the setback? Off of the lot lines for the houses.
On Lodge?
East and west.
East and west.
the setback from the back lane?
4.57 meters, 15 feet.
15 feet.
Mm-hmm. That's the extreme.
Just out of curiosity, how do you get there? No, like most residential properties have a 25-foot rear yard. And
yeah, it's RMFM, so the actual whole side, the property line along each public lane is actually considered the side yard.
Property line is considered the side yard.
Lodge Avenue is considered the front yard. This is considered the rear yard for the whole site, whether there's one property or 100. And then along the side lot lines, this is considered a side yard.
Under RMF, the side yard is 8 feet. Side yard.
Yep. Just while we're on that subject, is there fencing going to be along the back lane, or there'll be a?
There was a discussion about fencing along the back lane or no fencing along the back lane. Right now, you're in a more sporadic condition. Right now, snow removal is one of the concerns. If you put up all the fence and the lane got narrower, you've got a window that you have to end up on. So it's a discussion. There's no conclusion drawn at this stage. From a developer perspective, we would prefer to keep it open so that you better improve the openness of the environment rather than everybody putting up this big fence and have a boundary.
And are there balconies in this proposal? Are there?
Yes, there are. Okay. The four-story building will have balconies. And again,
so how many units in the four stories? Like obviously the duplexes you're saying are facing, I would assume inwards towards the center from both sides. Do you know what I'm saying? But the four stories, those will have balconies. How many actual suites face onto Rita and face onto Ainslie?
Well, for each building, a total of 42 units. Each building had 42 units.
But probably the tops would just divide that.
Less than 50, because if you look at this and this, and those are not the street that you're referring to. So I say about 40%. Now the concept over here, the reason why we went with a four-story, why we only have 42 units, is the main floor is being used for indoor parking.
Okay.
So you don't have units now on the main floor, and we're not digging a big hole.
So we'll use 14 per floor.
Yes. Living area is only three stories. And the main floor enclosed will be a parking lot.
Okay.
So we're using the main floor, the perimeter of the building on the main floor become green space. The surrounding, around the footprints of the building,
right.
It becomes green space, become public space rather than my yard, your yard.
Okay.
Is it boulevard raised? Is that what it is? Or like green space, if you go down the street, or whatever you want to call it, the
internal
pathway.
Street.
Yeah, okay.
So we come around going to the plaza.
Now forget the plaza. How wide is that green space on the west side of that first building there? Yeah.
This is 20 feet.
It's 20 feet wide.
And the yard over here is another 20 feet.
So they're like 20-foot boulevards.
Yes.
That's what they're going to look like with trees on them.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're intending to grow trees, address the internal access.
The chance, okay, so it's green space, but it's not usable green space like for kids or.
Possible. We did talk about a plaza area over here. And again, we're creating internal pocket space and drop off room for the multi story building. So we're creating pockets of space within the development.
Ray, are there garages that would be associated with, it sounds like there's underground parking for the four story buildings,
those
but the
underground on grade and closed parking, so you don't see the cars.
And the duplexes?
The duplexes have garages at the front and tenant parking on the outside.
Okay.
And again, the roadway is wide enough to meet the city standard to park to allow one side parking.
How wide is that roadway? Just is it 24 feet or?
27. It'll be 27 feet.
So you got 67 feet between the smaller buildings and the big ones on both sides then?
Yeah.
Actually, you've only got 15-foot rear yards for kids to play if somebody with small kids wants to buy one of those.
But don't forget, this whole thing here is open.
Oh, I know, it's a community center. I know.
And you're talking about fencing from the very south end? There's nothing in the plans right now. That's something that
the other intention we're trying to do is there's a bunch of very mature trees up here. I can't remember my last tree that was planted for very specific events way back. It's like 20, 30 years old or even
it's
older.
It's poplars on the things I've got.
Poplars here. And we're trying to maintain them too. And all the landscaping become internal along the back lane. The concern about planting along the back lane is how well would they grow. It's just reality we're dealing with. Yeah.
The poplars are only going to live another 7 or 8 years anyways.
Yeah,
20 years
10.
Old.
Yeah.
What about the turnabouts and the main parking area in the middle there? Is that, that's where it is? So those are the turnabouts, right?
Yes.
And this is probably a question for our public or our administration, I guess, NOAA, in terms of is there any concerns with fire and paramedic, you know, ensuring that you can get, you know, safety would be
fire, the plan examiner for the fire department does have some concerns with the access. One of them is through that plaza area. The thoroughfare is not designed how they'd like to see it for emergency vehicles, and that one street here is a little bit too long. So there would need to at least be some sort of a turnaround. And then their other issue is access to this building here. They would like to see some more space there. And that's why there's a condition in the planner's report recommending that that the director of public works and the chief of emergency services has to sign off on the plan before any building permits.
Before it goes to council?
Before any building permits can be issued. But the reality is they wouldn't get building permits without satisfying plan examination. So it's kind of just an extra.
Is
this something
that
needs
that
to be addressed now, or this is a conceptual plan, or is this something that
this is
on a site plan that can be?
This is a matter of design detail that this is a conceptual plan. Ideally, you'd want to have everything, you know, solved from the get-go, but I don't think it's something that is going to alter this, you know, drastically.
How many feet of green space, Ray, have you got at the south end?
Over here.
South of that big building.
Over here.
Yeah. Is that 20 feet? Again?
25. 7.62 meters.
They could put a road.
If that big building was moved north a wee bit, tighten. Well, okay.
There are solutions, but we're more concentrating on revising the concept that we can better address the concept that we received, the input that we have received previously. The firefighting requirement is part of the working building permit process that we will work through with fire department, like Don. Normal process. We won't get permit if we can't satisfy the firefighting access.
That's true.
I just wanted
either
to...
Either you take your chances with us, or you take your chances with them.
You don't take chances.
Well, my point is that when whatever happens with this application, if it was going to be approved subject to some of those things the way that they're written like that, planning doesn't talk about those things and neither does council, and what happens is it leaves city council and then it goes to the legal department, and that's when the director of public works and others start to explain to you how they would like to see it done. We're finished.
Sure. No, we can yes. We can work
on
those.
My only caution.
Sure, Councilor, we can work on those criteria before I go to council. We only got the phone call about the fire department the day before.
I know.
So everything is prepared.
I saw the email today myself.
So that option is always open. Like if you'd say, well, that's part of the criteria, make sure we satisfy public works before we do it, fine.
That is something I'm curious about, though, Councilor Fielding, and through you to Noah. My understanding of the development agreement parameters is that when an application comes in, that it is sent to all members of the Associated Coordinating Group, who then get a certain amount of time to respond before the application is processed.
Yeah, it was.
So if that happened, how could the fire department come in a day and a half before when they had that opportunity at the front end?
I'm not sure, because there was an administrative coordinating group meeting, but again, the plans had changed. So what they saw was a wraparound road that went around the whole site.
That's
so there probably wasn't any issue.
This? Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So they saw this one first.
All right.
It was actually the zoning officer that said,
okay,
well,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have some questions on parking. I'm not sure if you're going to deal with it, but just a couple more questions here before we go. And some of them that I had written down probably deal more, I think you'd mentioned, about site plans and that sort of stuff later on down the line. Now, you know, it seems from the report from the meetings that there was concerns from the residents in terms of the height of the building was probably the number one concern, it seems like. Is there an ability to do this plan in three stories as opposed to four without changing density, without...
Is there economical questions? Is it all about economics? The going underground, we all know, is very the comments about the building height being too high most likely was because of the placement, the initial placement of the building and the original concept. By compromising, putting the building to the center of it, 124 feet minimum, away from property line, not to the adjacent homes, plus the back lane, that's another 60 feet. So we're talking 140 feet in average from the edge of a four-story building, the outside edge, not the building face, to the edge of the balcony, property line, to the back lane, to the neighbor's property line, it's 140 feet. And clearly demonstrate, based on a 25-foot setback, hypothetically using the infill housing program. I don't want to push that program too far because it's not adopted yet, so, but it clearly indicate that's infill housing. And we are moving from 25 feet to 140. We're not moving by 5 feet. We're restructuring the entire site based on 140 feet versus original proposal. But 25.
Great. You know, obviously there was a change in this plan since then. I mean, what was this because of the concerns of the residents? What, you know,
it's
you
the
presented the one
residents.
Plan,
we,
now
we,
it's...
We took the comments seriously. The last thing I want is come to a meeting over here, has a major fight over here in the confrontational approach. I'd like to be able to come here and say I did listen, we did listen, along with Elkhorn, to come up with a reasonable solution as the greatest compromise that we can get by placing the building at the center of the site. There's nowhere else I can place this building. The maximum distance to the residents is at the center of the site. Move a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, it will be either too close to the guys on the east or too close to the guys on the west. If I place it dead center, that's the most extreme I can set back for a four-story building.
Okay. Do you have any other further questions? I'm assuming you're not handling the parking questions that we have, or are you handling that as well?
Traffic, you mean?
Traffic.
We do have a representative from Stantec Engineering that can comment on the traffic issue.
Right. Did you gentlemen have any questions for the design layout, Councillor Clement or Nordman? Okay.
Can I ask on the other side, Councillor Fielding, on the street opposite, there's four houses flanking? Well, no, the lodge is running this way. The other, is it Golden Gate?
Golden Gate.
Okay. There's houses flanking lodge on both corners. Is that what that is? There's no houses facing lodges.
No. This is a side road.
It's probably four houses there, Councillor Clement.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
It's four in the ends. There's one on each side of the road.
Yeah, I thought that's what I could see, but I wasn't sure.
I used to park
there when I went to school there on that street. So once again, did you want to call up your traffic engineers? You could say your name for the record.
Sure. Okay.
My name is Wayne Bysick. I'm with Stantec Consulting in the Transportation Planning and Transportation Engineering Group. The questions you're having on the trip generation of the site?
Yeah, a couple questions from the report. And if you could maybe fill us in on the report, I'm not sure everyone had a chance to read the report or not, but what are your findings? And then just kind of give us a review, and then I've got some questions to that, please.
Okay. Essentially, what I did was look at the trip generation with the existing school as a fully functioning school, and then the trip generation based on the 132 condo site development. I contacted the Seine River School Division, and at the height of their, I shouldn't say the height, on the average of their 10-15-year occupancy on the final years, the occupancy was between 900 and 920 students.
You're saying Seine River, do you mean
St.
James?
St. James
I'm sorry, St. James Assiniboia, I'm sorry. So in using industry standard techniques for trip generation, we calculated that for both the AM peak hour, the PM peak hour, and the daily traffic. And when we compared that to the post-development or under this current development plan, the traffic, by all intents and purposes, is less than half than it was when the school was fully operating. So traffic operations on Lodge, as well as the back lane to the west, is enhanced because of the parking facilities that were formerly there are gone. The drop-off zone is eliminated. And traffic congestion queuing on, or any congestion that was on Lodge, is reduced because there's no drop-offs for students and buses. So essentially what we were looking at is to see, is there a detriment or traffic impact to this? And we are the understanding that there's a net gain to be seen for traffic operations in the area, not just on Lodge, but also west to Moray, and also north on Ness. So we didn't have any real concerns with this. We saw it as a net benefit to the community as far as traffic operations. Condos have a different trip generation, and it's greatly reduced in a school.
Probably from the school, you know, you're probably getting early morning traffic and probably late when you're lunchtime.
Absolutely. If you have a chance to take a table one in that report there, and I won't spend too much time on it. There's a lot of details in there, but. Pre-development land use during the peak hour in the morning was 382. That's both inbound and outbound. It accounts for buses and
382, this is when school?
School, during the AM commuter peak hour, yes.
Okay, and this is obviously when the school was operating.
Correct. Okay. And the weekday, we had about 1,600 trips for the day. Now, this is buses, parent drop-offs, deliveries, staff, everybody included. When you look at the post-development in the AM, we've got 64 trips. Again, they're condo units, so they're not. They're a much lower generator. And for the day, we're down to 818, which is essentially half the traffic. So, in my opinion, there's no issue with. There shouldn't be any issue with traffic out here because it's off-peak and it's greatly reduced overall.
Councillor Clement or Norbin, any questions in terms of traffic and volumes?
How many parking spaces are there? What's the ratio per
unit? That I could not comment on.
Yeah, that's my question. within the building footprint for the multi, you talked about the multifamily one, they would be 100%, so a minimum 42 within the building.
How many spaces are outside, Rick?
29 and 31.
Oh, there's a bunch over there.
Yes.
And on the outside.
Might not be done with you.
No,
it's okay.
These people.
I'm not sure.
What?
Okay, so there's 60 outside.
Yeah.
That can be used by anybody. And
what does the school have right now? I mean, I know it's kind of a gravel parkade, but does anyone know what it accommodated before the school closure?
It was principally, there was parking principally along the west side, mostly for staff.
gravel pad went down Ainslie, right? I mean,
correct.
It's
a continuous approach of gravel. And I guess whatever on-street parking would be along Morris and
is the anticipation so long that this is primarily a seniors complex? Is that what you're thinking?
No, we haven't set any criteria in terms of what type of condominium. Today's market is hard to predict which category you can fall into.
I'm just thinking about the number of parking spaces.
Well, we have more than 1.5. Like if you go 42, 42 plus the 60, because the rest of them you have street parking and you have two per housing.
Well, the houses I'm not concerned about. They've got garages and they've got visitors parking in their driveways.
We have 144 unit parking, 144 to 82 units.
That's underground.
Hmm? Well, no, they've got 60 outside and 84. They got 84 one inside for each one. And they've got 60 outside, although some of that, I guess, is designated for visitors.
Yeah, you require to have 10%.
And handicap parking?
Yeah.
Well, aren't they visitors?
I guess they could be. But is there, somebody might not be able to get a
van inside. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I do have, I'm not sure if you're doing all this presentation together. I see Guy Hobman is put down here. Are you speaking, Guy, to this, or are you allowing Ray as part of your team? Okay. Is there anyone else from the applicant, Garth Speak? Are you registered, Garth? Oh, you are here, Garth Speak. Got a handwriting like a doctor, Mr. Speak.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good evening. Just like to speak for a moment a little bit about the background, how this evolved in the process, because I think it's critically important in this particular situation. As Mr. Wan has noted, Green Tree was the selected proponent for this particular development because the development that came forward met very definite criteria that the St. James Assiniboia School Division had, namely they were looking for an infill project that was going to be compatible with the neighborhood. By way of background, the Green Tree group of companies, of course, are owned by Mr. Hobman. Something I think that is important here is that Green Tree has a long and extensive history of developing school sites successfully in the St. James area, namely Woodhaven and Columbus school sites previously. When this entire process evolved, Mr. Hobman was very, very adamant with us that it be done in a slow and deliberate fashion. Prior to any kind of formal application, as you know, Councillor Fielding, we had general discussions about what had application to a site like this, and we had subsequent discussions with the planning department so that everybody was kept in touch as this thing evolved. One of the things that Mr. Hobman was also very adamant about was that there would be extensive consultation with the community. As a result, we ran not one town hall meeting the way it's advocated in the guidelines, but rather three. We had a town hall meeting in early October, another one in November, and a subsequent one in December. One of the things that we did do to ensure that the neighborhood was well informed is that the advertising was done in the local newspaper. In addition, in compliance with the guidelines that we received from Mr. Yock, we personally hand-walked notifications around into to the immediate area. The first meeting had approximately 100 attendees, the second 40, and close to 90 again in the third meeting. In selecting the architect for this particular proposal, Mr. Hobman, once again, was very adamant that we select an architect that was sympathetic to infill development. Mr. Wan, as many of you know, and has done a significant number of these projects. He has a very strong working relationship with the administration and is very, very concerned about due process, as are we. He's also noted for his creativity in looking at difficult situations, and I think that's mirrored by what you've seen happen here. We had an initial meeting that Mr. Wan was not at. We passed out a survey to get feedback from the community. And as has been noted, the key consideration that came up, Mr. Chairman, was a concern about height. You've seen a significant modification in the site plan here, and it was done, frankly, through extensive discussions with the area planner. Mr. Yock, I'd like to thank him for his assistance throughout the entirety of the process. He was always there, and he was very frank in what he told us. The key considerations about the project that you see here are, first of all, this project has no variances. As Mr. Wan has pointed out, we have very significant setbacks from the back of these buildings to the property lines of the homeowners, both on Ainslie and Reed, of 140 feet. In other words, that's one full lot separating, and a large lot, 140 feet in depth, separating those buildings from the back of the homeowners' properties. I'd also like to emphasize, so nothing is lost in translation here, this is all condominiums. There are no rental properties involved in this in any way, shape, or form. We also know from speaking with the St. James School Division that there was concern that there would be rental properties coming onto this very important infill site. The other thing that is important to note, and certainly Councillor Clement was familiar with this, is that there is a 7.5-acre green space immediately adjacent to this site. And certainly the opportunity for people to use that green site, whether it's children or grandchildren, is going to be ample. I would also like to speak to the fact that, as has been pointed out, the opportunity for enhanced density up to 400-plus units here is not something that was ever intentioned. Mr. Hobman was once again very, very adamant that what was built here had to be compatible, something that would marry to the neighborhood after extensive consultation. Hence, the density, as is noted in the planner's report here, is well below what could have been realized. I think something that is very, very important, and Mr. Yock carries on a long-standing tradition here of well-written reports by the administration. I think page 11 is particularly critical, and I'm just going to quote from it. It reads, relative to compatibility, the guidelines provide the means to distinguish quality developments that are scaled and designed in such a way as to enhance neighborhoods from those that risk harming neighborhoods. The intention of this entire development is to be a development that's an enhancement to St. James. We've had tremendous feedback from the community on those that came out. We listened carefully to what they have had to say. We don't have any trouble in telling you that we have a tremendous number of people, not only in the St. James community and outside of it, that are anxious to see this particular project proceed into the near future. I think that something else that's very, very important, as noted on page 12, is easy access to transit for people. Finally, I think something that we have to note here, once again, are building setbacks. Building setbacks, as we've noted, are more than are required in this particular set of circumstances. And most important of all, I think, in conclusion in the planner's report is on page 15. And that talks about the condominiums are expected to provide housing opportunities. And I underline that opportunities because we know what economic circumstances are like today. Housing economic opportunities for young families as well as older residents who are seeking different housing styles because of lifestyle changes. And concern in many older established neighborhoods in Winnipeg, such as Silver Heights, is the lack of opportunities for empty nesters and seniors. Councillor Clement, addressing your consideration, is this a seniors complex? No, it's not. Is it open to everyone so that young people who would like to return to St. James will have an opportunity to do so? Absolutely. But Mr. Hobman was also very adamant about the nature of the kind of housing that was being introduced here, so there was application for a broad spectrum of people within this community. I would like to say in closing that we appreciate immensely the response, the very positive and constructive response that we've had from the members of the St. James community. Some people felt that we were tardy in bringing this application forward, quite the reverse. We were very concerned that we followed due process. We wanted to make absolutely certain that the people in this neighborhood had a great deal of opportunity for input. We have had people phone and ask, you know, when's it going up on the website, so forth. Mr. Yock has provided that information. We see this as a wonderful opportunity to enhance what is a very special neighborhood. We understand that this is a unique, large infill opportunity. That's the reason we have taken our time, and we hope that this committee will see fit to recommend the application to RMF rezoning. thank you, unless there are any questions.
Mr. Steak. I've got two other people that wanted to speak in support. First one, I didn't get your name from the traffic study. Is it Ed Garzana? Is that who it is? Okay, would you like to speak,
no,
sir?
I don't.
Okay, so you register in support of the, and you're, okay. And second one is, and I won't be able to pronounce this name, from 291 Ainslie Street. I believe that's in support. Lucia, I believe. F.J.
I have a question for Ray.
He'll come back. Okay. He'll be called back at appropriate time. Actually, well, maybe we should have him here because if it's new information, he can't present new information. Right, yeah. So,
are these walk-ups or is there an elevator in there?
Elevators.
Okay.
The four-story will be elevators.
Just one final. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this?
You mentioned a resident at 291. That's my neighbor here.
Okay.
Who is not in support.
Okay, we have it.
You can change it. The last name is L-U-C-E?
Yes.
Yeah, we have it in support here.
We can have it changed.
Yeah, just make that. Yep. So once again, is there anyone else here that wishes to speak in favor of this application? No one? With that, I'll call the people that are in opposition to it. The first one, I believe, I'm not sure if you're, someone like to go first, Michelle Patterson. Michelle. Okay, is there someone from, I notice there's three Pattersons that are registered. Is there someone that would like to speak from same residence, I guess? Is there a representative from?
Well, three, I believe.
I've got Michelle Patterson, a Scott Patterson,
yeah.
287 Ainslie. And I guess the other one is Peterson. Sorry about that. So,
okay.
Would you like to speak, Scott, to the proposal?
Sure.
Just come to the end of. It doesn't matter to me who would like to speak. If there's someone, if you've got a group that is someone leading the charge for the
appeal.
Okay. If you'd like to come up to the end, Mr. Patterson. And Michelle, you said that you're just willing. You want to register as an opposition. Is that right? You're not willing. Not interested in speaking.
First of all, I'd like to express to you how confusing I have found this whole process, in that my understanding was that the developer makes an application or a proposal to you. The city departments, like planning, then undertakes a study of the proposal and makes recommendations in a report. And then, presumably, you folks have time to study the report and the application. The applicant has time to study the report. And, of course, the community has some time to study the report. The information was available, became available last Friday. I don't think that's reasonable. With respect to the report, I found this really interesting, referencing to.
Do you want me to just address that first off? It is standard. I guess the clerk can maybe address that as well, but it is. That's generally.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that's the way we've done business at City Hall for years. But I'm saying, from my perspective, I think that's very poor, especially given the change in the zoning here. We're talking from recreation to multiple family. I mean. The only other more significant change would be like from recreation to industrial. Yet we're all expected to marshal our arguments to you in the course of two businesses. I just don't think that's reasonable. Furthermore, if you look at the report, and unless I'm out to lunch here, on page 11, Figure 4 is the current site plan, i.e. the plan that is being considered by you and was considered by the planning department. It doesn't bear any relation to this. Furthermore, at the end of the report, and I think there's only one mention of it, is this proposed housing development that, again, doesn't bear any relation to this proposal. So what are we talking about? This one, or this one? I don't know. Um, With respect to the public consultations that were undertaken and referred to by the planning department in the report with regard to the survey, it's just my personal opinion, I didn't think the quality of consultation was there. The so-called survey that was handed out was a survey for potential buyers of the property, asking us how many bedrooms we'd like, how many square footage in each bedroom. I mean, this wasn't a survey that spoke to collecting the concerns of neighbors. I also found it interesting when Councillor Clement was asking about the setbacks here, that we're talking a 15-foot setback from the lane. Yet I just find it ironic that it was deemed by the architect to have at least 20 feet around the building. Certainly, I think more consideration should be given to a further setback of the duplexes. In general, I think the proposal is out of character of the existing neighborhood. There's nowhere else where there are four-story buildings or such density of housing anywhere in Silver Heights other than along Portage Avenue and Ness. And again, I find it interesting that in the planning department report, there was reference to how folks here could avail themselves of transit. Where? Portage Avenue, which is a pretty good hoof. Below with a strong wind. I just feel very strongly that the whole development is out of keeping of the character of the neighborhood. And in sum, I would ask that this committee consider, if it's at all possible, given the confusion as to what is being proposed or not, that the community be given additional time to respond to the proposal, whichever one it is, because they're all different. I appreciate you councillors might not appreciate some of the subtle nuances. For example, the orientation of this building being as it is here or turned, that might have a lot of impact depending on where you live in the neighborhood. I don't think that we've been given the opportunity to fully marshal our opposition to this plan.
Yes. I do have some questions.
Yes.
Did you get a chance? I mean, there was three meetings that they did host.
Yes.
Did you have an opportunity to go to the three meetings and express
them,
your concerns?
I found it a complete waste of time. The first meeting, we were given the survey that's talked about. It was a survey for buyers. It wasn't a survey to get our input. I listened to some people raise their concerns, and I don't feel it was given much weight. I mean, right from the very beginning, and Councillor Fielding, sorry, I'm going to say it, you were in the paper last summer in support of this project involving four-story buildings and this kind of density of housing. And all right, the developer had three meetings, but there was no indication that this concept was ever up for any kind of significant modification.
Well, just further to your point, since you brought it up,
yep.
There's been no decisions made on this as such, and that's what this hearing's for,
yep.
To hear concerns from residents. I guess a question that I did have, you know, I did notice in the report, and I wasn't at the community meetings because it's not appropriate for the city councillor who is going to be making a decision on it to attend a meeting like that, because then you're considered biased one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you can appreciate that. That's a normal practice that we do use here at City Hall, which I think makes some sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I did notice in the report that it did indicate that there was, you know, three issues that were brought up. I didn't see the mailer that they put out, but there was the first issue, it sounded like, was height. The second issue was parking. And the third issue was adverse Is that something that you saw on the piece of information that they had a out to people at the meeting? Or
No. The developer didn't hand out anything that tried to systematically collect our thoughts on the development. It was simply a form that you would give to a potential buyer. And we raised our concerns a number of times at that initial meeting. So what do you want us to do with this? So for the planning department to turn around and look at the survey results and say, well, 40% were opposed. Hell, I never even put in my survey. I thought it was inappropriate.
Okay, what I'll do, sir, is I'll have the applicant address that in their
yep.
You know, when they retort, when they come back and answer some questions. So I'll have them identify that and address that concern for you when
right.
they come back.
Furthermore, there was one individual at a meeting who indicated to the developer that there was over 100 signatures obtained by local people who objected to the development. And basically, my recollection of the response from the developer was, well, that's fine. You can have your say at the community committee meeting. Like, that didn't strike me as being in the spirit of consultation and cooperation with the neighborhood.
That was in the first, second, or third meeting? Or
Third, I believe.
Councillor Clement, did you have a question, it looked like?
Mr. Patterson, a short while ago, one of the presenters, I believe, was Mr. Steve, made the comment that this plan, when they put it together, was, or Green Tree was picked as the proponent because the St. James School of Vision was of the view that this particular, or their particular proposal, which I assume mirrors this somewhat, was deemed by them to be. I'm going to say community standard because I don't know what else to call it. Prior to them putting the land up for sale, are you aware of any surveys that the St. James School Division made or put forward into the community?
No, they did not. I made some inquiries, and it was related to me. I believe there's provincial legislation that prohibits a school division applying for rezoning. Pardon me?
I think it's to sell a property. They're not allowed to do it.
No, or they cannot
to develop the
develop it or develop undertake it. A rezoning, etc. They've been mute.
Okay.
And yes, we have Green Tree's words that their development was, you know, the best. But let's be frank. The school's going to do what they're going to do, the division, to maximize their return. And, you know, that's has been made known to me personally, and maybe to some of you publicly, that the anticipated revenue from this property is earmarked to offset the cost for Sturgeon Heights Collegiate development.
Do you have any questions, Councillor, or did you have a follow-up question, Councillor Clement?
No. Well, I mean, the last comment, probably.
Councillor, just one final question, sir. You know, is it just this application that you're opposed to, or is there you know, any development on the site that you'd be?
No, of course there's got to be development. Where I'm confused, and I've tried to read Plan Winnipeg, it's a real sleeper document. But, you know, I thought the intent was to try to involve communities in decisions that affect the community. I just don't feel that in this process there's been a good balance between the amount of city involvement, for example, the planning department with the developer versus with the community. Furthermore, how can we come here and intelligently talk about the development proposal when we're not even sure what it is?
Okay, fair enough. Is there any further questions for... Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Scott Patterson, that's the same address, I'm assuming. Is there Scott here? That is Scott, I'm sorry. Arn Peterson?
Yeah, no comment.
No comment, so you just want to register as in opposition, is that right?
Okay.
Teresa Young, 358 Ainsley, in opposition. Okay. Okay. Great. Would you like to come up, sir? Your name is... Okay. Okay. Sorry, you want to just give me your name, sir?
My name is Marlon Matson.
Okay.
I live at 358 Ainsley Street. And my concerns are three only. The first one, if I can start at the beginning, I almost started in the middle. The first problem concerns the Parks and Recreation area of the Silver Heights Recreational Center. It's starting to, trying to be a super sports center. I don't know whether everybody knows that or not, but they're trying to build it up into a really good club center. And
Sturgeon Creek or Silver Heights?
Or Sturgeon Creek, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, wrong one. Anyhow, the end of it is that we have a baseball diamond in one corner of this property, just below that green line. And if we were to have this go forward the way it is right now, that property would have one corner of it, and if somebody hit a home run, they're going to go through somebody's glass window because it takes off a corner of the baseball diamond because that was in the schoolyard area. So that's one concern. They're going to lose property for a baseball diamond. And right now, we don't have a lot in that area for kids. It's the only baseball diamond unless you go over next to the airport. Okay. There's also some at I've forgotten the name of the new school.
Sturgeon Heights,
yeah. There's a baseball diamond there as well. But the younger kids from the neighborhood, they go to that one. I have three nieces that use it, for instance. Okay. I'm at 358 Ainsley. I have a sister at 33 on Rita. And I've been to all of the meetings. I was in one, but I came late. The statement about the surveys that we received was quite true. The last one asked me whether I wanted an entrance into my kitchen or my living room and things like that. Okay? I just wanted to confirm that so that you knew it was there. The matching of the neighborhood, the average home in that area is the 25...
What of the neighborhood?
The matching to suit the neighborhood.
Okay, right.
Most of these houses are single-dwelling, single-family dwellings, and they're only, like you say, 25 feet. I think mine's 23. Okay. The concerns that came up in the meetings I was at was on all of the surrounding properties on each side in privacy. The two-story buildings are looking down on one-story buildings, right across the back lane from them. There was a number of people that had brought that up at the meetings. Our last meeting, I actually stood up and ended because it was getting too contentious.
So I'm clear, the concern that you have, you're saying, is with
this area,
my
neighbors were talking about this area and this area not having the privacy because there's two-story buildings right across the back lane from them.
So you're saying the potential new duplex that would be going up. But wouldn't that be the same thing as if you live next door if you lived on another street, because you're able to build up to 34, 35 feet, mm-hmm. People have an ability to build to whatever height.
In that neighborhood, to the best of my recollection, there's about seven that go over the 25.
There's seven that go over
25 feet. Most of them are on the west side of Ainsley.
Okay.
There's one that's Kitty Horner's right here. I know that one because that's my mother-in-law. There's one on Golden Gate.
So what you're saying is there's a lot of bungalows there.
There's all bungalows. There's very few two-story buildings. I can name them almost. Okay, I've been there a few years already. The other concern I have is this entrance and this entrance, where they're going to have 296 possible vehicles coming and going from that at any time of the day or night, directly opposite Golden Gate, which has a problem with access now. And I find it very hard to believe that there's a 50% saving in the traffic in that area, because I've lived there for 4 or 5 years on Ainsley. I've come from further over. But in this area, the school had lineups with traffic at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, afternoon. Other than that, there wasn't that much traffic. The concern we had was that there's, I think it's actually about here, a fire department ambulance. And when those two sides were lined up, there was no way they could get to Ainsley or to beyond through that area. With 296 possible vehicles, like two per address, we could have a lot more traffic, in my mind. I haven't done a professional study on that. But that's my concern.
Okay, well, the traffic issue, the applicant, I'm sure, is scribbling down some notes here. So if you, if we could, when we call you back up, if you could address these issues that brought forth.
Thank you.
Other comments? So I'm assuming, obviously, that you're opposed to this. Are you opposed to any development on the site at all, or is this just?
I would like it to be a park, but I don't think that's reasonable. There's also no. I understand from comments I've heard from the school board that there was an opportunity to have a health clinic on that site, a CenterPoint Health Clinic.
Yeah, just to be clear, though, sir, I mean, this wasn't the city process, right? So it's the school division that decided to made the decision in terms of closing the school, as well as, they put the land up for sale. It's our job to talk about the land use issue, so we don't have any control on whether the school division decides to sell the land. And so that's not a decision that we make here at this table. But,
you were quite right, by the way. It is the school board has to go to the province. The province does the RFP. They make the decision on the RFP.
Okay. Thank you, sir, for your presentation. You. Okay. Is Daryl Henker? Henker? Is
that right?
Henniker. Henniker? Would you like to speak, sir?
No, I was just...
Registered in opposition? Okay. Diane Walker and Darren Meinecker? Okay. Great. Okay. If I could get you to just come up to the, just because we need to record your presentation for your own purposes and the public's purposes, they would be able to hear your presentation. So,
there's you're located at 300 Rita Street.
Okay, so that's which house would that be? It'd be the
fourth house down.
Okay, fourth house down. Okay.
I did come here today to hand in 113 signed forms of that of objection. The one thing, since listening to what you're saying, and it does make sense that this is the frontage, this is the rear, and these are the sides. But you can't really compare these homes to a normal street because it's considered side. So you guys are, what did you say, 15 feet? What is the normal frontage on my house? The street, what is that supposed to be? Or even, forget the front, what is the back lane requirement to the property? Like, if you take this house, these ones have a decent setback, and these ones are moved over. The view from the second story of this home is going to be right into our backyard.
So your concern isn't the four-story, it's the duplexes that are proposed to go.
There's an improvement on the four-story. I guess once you see that 40-foot building out there, and then I'm in my backyard, and it's going to definitely be better than the people that had the buildings here and the homes right here. But this is still a concern to me that the views will be right into my backyard from a second-story house. The setbacks aren't... It almost seems to me that this frontage setback should be also what's along the side, if that's the way planning has it set up, that it's allowed that way. I mean, that's one of my objections on it. These ones right here are too close to...
I will have our planning, the applicant, address that concern for you.
Yeah.
To be fair, there isn't a variance that's attached to this, so it is within what they're allowed by law to do. Just a second point in terms of the duplexes. I guess the question, I'll pose it in a question, is, if your neighbor, tears down his house and he's got a bungalow, to be fair, he or she is able to build upwards of 35 feet, right, by law.
Side.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I guess the duplex that they'd be proposing is seems to be in line with what your neighbor could do or you could do. You could tear down your house and build it up to 35 feet. So, I don't
One
know
One thing, if someone beside you builds a two-story house... They're not going to have their kitchen window on the side of their house, potentially. The people viewing out of the back of their homes is going to be either the kitchen or the living room. It's not going to be a bedroom. But, I mean, that's the objection to it.
The objection, once again, is the duplex. Mm-hmm. The four-story isn't as big of an issue because of the duplex, but that's more the issue for you and the setbacks on the side.
Yeah, and the concerns also are in traffic and... The studies done with the traffic on this site, I mean, this is the first time that has come across to the public. That wasn't presented to us in all the meetings. to the extent that it was today.
What was your, I mean, since you do have that information now, did you have a chance to read the report? And, you know, not everyone knows that our systems and that
sort
of stuff.
Yeah, that was a challenge. I didn't know how to access it, but, I mean, it sounds great. It sounds, the fact that there's a lot less traffic is what everybody wants, right? The concern with the traffic maybe is, was that study done on the weekends? Because our kids are going to be playing on these streets and that on the weekends. This is going to be used probably more on the weekend. A school would be vacant.
I'll get them to address those questions when we do call them back up to answer any questions that you do have, yeah. Sir. Any other questions?
No. Nope.
Any questions, gentlemen, Councillor Norman, Councillor Clement? No. Nope. Okay. Teresa Young, we already dealt with. And, you know, I'm sorry, sir, the 291 Ainsley, I couldn't pronounce your name. Did you wish to speak at all? Did you wish to speak, sir, on this? No. Okay. Okay, the last one is the last one, or no, there's two left to speak, actually. 259 Ainsley, Charles, is it men?
Yeah, I'm opposed.
Registered in opposition, is that right? Okay. The last one is in opposition. He is Fred Morse. Fred, would you like to come and speak to this issue, please? Mr. Clerk, just wondering. Now, there was a number of, looks like petitions, I guess, letters suggesting that in opposition to this. Do you want me just to read this, or do we just register that?
They'll form part of the public record. They'll be included as an exhibit as part of the public record.
All right. Good. Mr. Morse, anytime you're ready.
Okay, thank you for this opportunity, and I will point out to the councillors, because I'm a bit of a regular customer around here at times, that I am an area resident in this case. I live about a 2-minute walk away from the site, so I'll just point that out. And I guess the first question is, why is this meeting being held downtown at 5 o'clock in the afternoon? Last June, Scott, you held a meeting about what we're going to do with the site of Brooklyn's Community Club right at the site at 7 o'clock at night. And I really think that these people should deserve the meeting to be held maybe at the Surgeon Creek Community Club or maybe some other venue very close to the site.
Okay, I mean, this to be fair, this the venue is, you know, it's really our opportunity to ask you questions on concerns of it. But with that, you know, I believe there was 3 meetings held with the applicant in the community for it. You know, we generally hold the public hearing meetings here, I guess, on a go forward basis. You know, there could be opportunities to look at the community to have meetings, but there is 3 wards, so either we would have it in Charleswood or in South Tuxedo. You know, which could be a variety of things. You could have it in my ward, which goes from really the Grace Hospital all the way down to Pole Park, as well as in Brooklands. Or you could have it in Councillor Nordman's areas, so that could, you know, run anywhere from Sturgeon Road to Assiniboine Downs. I guess the argument that I might make is, you know, City Hall is fairly central. There is some pretty good bus systems to downtown. So, you know, to actively get downtown to City Hall, you know, I would argue might even be more accessible than if you're going to the very west side of Charleswood. But point taken.
I'll just make one more point on that. In 2001, in the Real Community Committee, there was a very contentious issue on the River Road YMCA. And at that time, councillors Vandell, Steves, and Angus had this very community committee meeting at a community club right in the community. And most of the people walked to this 6-hour meeting.
I think, to be fair, though, they don't meet anymore. The Real Community Committee doesn't meet downtown, but I mean, we're a little bit off topic. I mean, go, you know, obviously you got some.
Okay, something else that keeps on coming up here is the traffic concerns. And I don't want to get off topic again, but I think the one thing councillors should do in this case is when there is some sort of development going there, they should make a commitment to be there and do whatever the residents want, whether it's stop signs or speed humps, turning restrictions, whatever seems to come after the development is done. We can't always predict what the problems might be. And I'm not going to go into details, but there's an issue on Molson Street where infill housing in the city council as not being there to deal with the problems after it's built. So I think if city council can just make a commitment to be there when not only the residents that are here tonight, but the new residents, the concerns that they might have, and act quickly on. Okay. And I guess the third point is the biggest problem, it seems to me, that this project could be accepted a lot better if it was a little bit smaller. And, you know, when if this goes ahead and then people go out to Narron Avenue and this other project goes ahead with single dwelling housing and Sir Sam Steele School, for instance, or if they go to the north end and go to Florence Nightingale School, where they see 25 homes being built on property surrounded by about 28 homes, they're going to wonder, why did it have to be so big? This property is surrounded by approximately 55 homes, and we're talking about more than double the units on that, 136. And I think that is not a perfect guideline, but I think it shows that maybe we're just trying to cram too much into this space. And rather than, you know, blame the counselors or the school board or the developers, I think there's one. I think there's a fourth group of that's really getting a free ride in this whole issue, and that is the provincial government. Now, well, last week, you know, we know the city was really after the provincial government about a lot of issues, and maybe we should get them involved in this issue. Exactly what were the terms of Silver Heights Police sale? It's driving the price up.
Mr. Morris, just to be clear, you know, I want to give you as much latitude as you can, but to be fair, this hearing is not about selling Silver Heights. It's not about closing the school. This committee is really about the land use. So, you know, without, you know, kindly saying, if I could get you just to keep it to the land use policies as opposed to, because that's not a body of jurisdiction that we have any control. Silver Heights was a school that I went to, but that wasn't a decision. That was a decision made before I was elected. In fact, it wasn't made from this body at all. So if I could just ask you to maintain questions as it relates, or your presentation as it relates to the land use issue, because that's what we're ruling on here today.
Well, all I wanted to say is that maybe the actions of the provincial government drove the price up and led to the overdevelopment. I'll just leave it at that. And just perhaps, you know, maybe they should be asked about it instead of just avoiding this controversy altogether.
Is there any questions, Councillor Clement or Councillor Norman, to Mr. Morris? Thanks, Mr. Morris, for your presentation. Now, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to this? Otherwise, we will call back. Actually, there's a few people that have registered in information. Ron, is it Halwick? Right, and you don't wish to speak one way or the other?
Well,
feel free to come up, Ron, if you'd like to address this. You're a resident at 286 Ainsley, is that right?
Yeah, my name is Ron Holloway. I think my name's actually one of the ones in opposition on that piece of paper, but I oppose this, and I wasn't aware of this until this afternoon when I pulled the report off the website. So, and then the report is confusing in that there are actually two proposals, this one the way it is, and then another one on this in the same document that's got another set of fourplexes in this corner and the offset as mentioned. So,
well, the one, just for clarification, the one that, and I'll get the developers to talk to this as well, the applicant, but this is the one we're working off of, the one that they presented on this morning. So that is the plan which they brought forward.
So does this document then get updated, or is it relevant then to this report, or... the way the report is written is based on the one with the four fourplexes in it.
I'll get our public service to I don't know if you want to comment on that or comment on it later. Noah?
Sure, I can comment on it now. There was a slight modification to the plan after I had done a lot of work on the report. And essentially what they've done is replaced a couple of the fourplexes, there were four fourplex units in total, and replaced those with an equal amount of dwelling units but in the form of duplexes. Materially, there's really no significant
except with the roads.
The road used to go in between as well, the two four
four-story. I think there was a road going through there. Now it looks like a plaza or some kind. So it's a little confusing. And then the last issue, I guess there's three, and it's, again, just the report says that makes reference to Silver Heights Community Center being to the north of that, and that's Sturgeon Creek Community Center.
I noted that earlier on, and it is obviously Sturgeon Creek Community.
Other than that, it was very similar, just an information gathering, and then the confusion as to which development is actually going forward.
So just for clarification, it sounds like with the newer plan that's there that you're supportive of the nature of the proposal.
Not opposed to it.
Thank you. Any questions, councillors, from Mr. Helwick? Is that how you pronounce it?
Helwick.
Okay. No questions. Reg Harrington. Would you like to speak, Reg? You're at 220 Rita Street.
Okay.
Okay. Well, there's a few things. One, the traffic study. I'd like to see the traffic. If the traffic study included the side streets, Rita and Ainslie, or if it was just like on Lodge.
When the applicant comes back up again, I'll get them to address the. You're in Rita, so I'm assuming you're. More
no, both those streets. There's a lot of, especially Rita and possibly even on Ainslie with the shoppers. There's a whole bunch of stuff on Borders there. There's a lot of traffic that's changed. That whole pattern has changed a lot in the last 5 years.
Okay, but I believe, well, I'll let them address it, but
that'll be
the shoppers has been there for
using Rita and Ainslie to get the Portage, right?
Your concern is that is it based on before the Shoppers Drug Mart was put in and that sort, because that generates.
Yeah, I had the impression before that it actually was just with Lodge. Okay. That actually Rita and Ainslie had never had a study done on them at one time. And so there's just that. I know it's not the school, but the school board was all their decision was in camera, so nobody really knows what they decided. That's aside, just to put that in.
I'm sorry, the decision.
The school board, when they decided whatever to do with the property.
Okay, and to be fair, sir, you know, that's not a decision that we make here.
Just
school division, they picked, and this isn't kind of a menu of different items. What we have to deal with here, sir, is just the application that's before us, and the school division did their due diligence, and the Green Tree was the proponent, and so we're hearing that application as opposed to. Just to be clear, sir.
Yeah, no, very good. And the other, the setback issue with the back to the back lanes on both sides. Now, maybe I got it wrong, but my impression was because they're getting this revised zoning thing for the height. That's where that 15 feet comes in. If it had been just a normal, not a special, so much special a zoning thing, they would have had to be 25 feet from the building to the back lane. I'm just wondering if that's, like, the zoning has changed for the four-story buildings and it's getting applied to these multi-story buildings. I'm thinking maybe 25 feet on that setback would probably go down a lot smoother with the people living there. And the height, of course, nobody likes the height. It'd be nice to see the parking underground. There's a cost for that. But you could probably lose some feet there. It would lower the profile quite a bit. And that's about it.
I noticed you registered for information. You've seen all the information here. Is this something that you're supportive or are you opposed?
I'm supportive of some development there, yeah. I know the people that live up there closer, I know they have concerns, but just generally for the area, I'm concerned.
Did you have any questions, Councillor Norman or Councillor Clement at all? Nothing right now? Okay. Bonnie, is it Hook? Nothing. You just want to register this information? Oh, thank you. Okay. Robert, is it Malcolm and Karen Malcolm at 264 Rita? You registered for information. Yes. Did you want to speak, Mr. Malcolm?
Yes, I would.
Okay. You're at 264 Rita. So which just so clarification, which house are you?
Right down here at the bottom corner.
Okay, so you're near Portage Avenue, I guess. And you're
close to
entrance
Portage,
to liquor.
About portion. Halfway in the block between Lodge and Portage.
Right. Okay.
Okay. We did file for only information only, but it was on the basis of the first two meetings that we did attend. And I'd like to agree with those who spoke before in saying that there was more opposition from the residents than what I'm hearing tonight. And mostly it was, again, because of the lack of information of the kind of units at first. these proposals, well, not this one in particular, this is why I would like to change from just information to opposition. My understanding that the outward ring of buildings were supposed to be single occupancy only, single family, and not duplexes. So this has developed since, I guess, the December meeting, which I was unable to attend. So I'm disappointed in that because I was not against the idea of having residential development there. But my understanding, and I think, Mr. Steak, the word that you used was integration into the residential area. And like others have said, that these duplexes, two-story duplexes, are out of character with the majority of housing in that area. And that's why I think that it's an adverse thing to put in an area that is so settled and to ignore, by large, the community in that area that's lived there. I've been there for 20-plus years, and I'm very disappointed to see this come forward at the last minute without any, as far as I know, consultation with somebody who's attended the third meeting, if this was a proposal that was given at that time. The second issue already has been addressed too, or brought forward, is about the increased traffic. Being on Rita Street, I am a shift worker, and different hours of the day, night, there's a huge amount of increase of traffic since the school is closed, more than what we had then, which is incredible. You wouldn't think so. But for whatever reason, understanding the age of these streets and the traffic that has been traveling up and down, I believe that the city traffic and planning needs to do adequate surveys on the condition of these streets to be able to handle the traffic flow that's going to be a result of this development.
So, could you repeat that, sir?
Not the whole thing. The increased traffic flow since the closing of the school.
Okay.
And, you know, not just during the daytime hours, but even at night. It's incredible the amount of traffic that just goes in our block from Lodge to Portage alone. And if you take a look at the condition of that street, there's already like a 4-inch gap in the center of it. Every thaw, every rainfall that we get, we have huge pools of water that in some cases there it is accumulated so much that it's crossing over the street. And what I'm saying is that the condition of these streets are not conducive with the extra amount of traffic as a result of this development on both Ainslie, Lodge, and on Rita. And so I'd like the city to take a good strong look at doing a survey of the increased traffic and then to try to project what additional traffic flow we're going to be seeing.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Is there any questions from Councilor Nordman?
I'll ask a question. Do you not think, sir, that the largest volume, though, of this supposed traffic will come from Moray or Whitewold along Lodge?
No, actually, it seems to be coming from Portage and even as far north, well, of course, Rita ends at Ness.
Yeah. So, but I'm saying, you know, coming down Portage Avenue, the people would take the lights either at Moray or
Whitewall. You think so, but they're not. And I don't know whether it's because of McDonald's, the Shell, and Shoppers and the strip mall that's there, but all I can say is that I have personally seen an increase of traffic flow on that block. I can't speak for the other blocks north of me, but there's more traffic on that block than I have seen in all the 20 years plus that I've lived there. And you would expect it to be less with the school not in operation. But it is not so.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The following final person is Randy Zagalski, and you've registered for information. Do you wish to speak, Mr. Zagalski? No? Okay. Okay, I'd like to call back. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition?
Hands at the back.
Sure, come up, ma'am. Just back there. There is one time to make your presentation, sir, so I'm...
I just wanted to make one.
I'm sorry, I can't. Maybe you could confer with. In fact, that was your one time to make the presentations. I'm sorry.
Your name, please, ma'am?
Michelle Patterson.
Thank you.
I haven't had a chance to really consider this and the impact, but one thing that hasn't been raised yet and the impact that I'm feeling is. What's going to happen to the value of my home when a two-story duplex goes up 15 feet across the lane behind me? And what studies do you have or could be available for us to learn what impact that's going to have? I suggested.
Okay, you know, it's hard to. I'll try and have the applicant address any issues in terms of housing value. You know, it's hard. Sorry?
15 feet is probably a shorter distance than from you to me, and to have a two-story duplex go up that far from my backyard, I think is significantly going to affect the value of my house. And so that's my only comment.
Okay. I'll have the applicant address that concern as well. So if I could call your whole gang up here, gentlemen. And there is a number of questions, good questions from our residents. That I was hoping you you took down those questions and could address them one by one. I'm not sure if you want to go in order, or you're going first and then the traffic issues second.
I think the more effective way is I'll go through the list and I'll direct the either Garth or Wayne to answer the questions appropriately. That way we don't lose track of who asked the question first, and I'll follow the similar sequence as the presenter.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Patterson's comment about the process of the report and the procedure, that we're following the procedure that is set out by the city bylaw, so there's really not much we can alter other than we have, for the record, we have done more than what is necessary of other than being a good gesture. Those open houses were serious. They were taken seriously. And the comment about the survey form, based on my review of the report of the survey form, although I wasn't at the first meeting, but prior to us picking up the pencil and draw the first drawing, which is on your right, I have seen comments about three-story, four stories, no three stories, no multifamilies. Those comments were offered.
I'm sorry.
Those comments were offered. They were on part of the survey under the common list. So although the form may not be custom-made to say, are you object or are you in support, or what do you like to see, I don't think that's the criteria that we'll be asking. As a developer, you will like to see what is going to be supported, not what is going to be opposed. So we're trying to ask that questions.
Do you have a question, Councillor Clement, or you're just...
You want me to come for you?
Go ahead, Mr.
Okay. The question about the consistency or inconsistency of the site plan submitted as part of the planner's report on page 5, that was the site plan to your right. That was the original site plan for the second and third open house. And subsequent to that, we have modified the site plan as shown on page 6. And further to that, we thought we're refining the site plan as we're going, and that's the one you see on your left. And that's the site plan we're using as part of the discussion. As the planner has identified, the distance setback from the four-story building to the property line do not change, has not been altered. And the total density of the site remain. The height of the four-story building remain. The number of units within the four-story building remain the same. They're all the same building blocks. And further to that same question about the duplexes. Duplexes has always been shown on the second and third meeting. In fact, they're all the same building blocks on that site plan versus that site plan. With regard to the comments about the setback of the duplex to the back lane, 15 feet is from the back of the duplexes to our property line, plus the 16 feet typical back lane city property, plus their own setback, which you will see on the aerial photo. Majority of the back of their property, of the adjacent properties, are garages.
So just for clarification, so you're saying the normal back lane is 16 feet back lane.
Correct.
And then the setback is 15 feet from, I'm assuming, the back lane to the edge of
the house. The duplexes.
Edge of the house, so it's actually
31 feet.
31 feet.
Plus the setback that the adjacent neighbor required to have as a backyard setback criteria. Majority of the residents along the east side and the west side of the back lane do have garages. And if you talk about privacy, I'm not disputing the fact that a two-story building adjacent to a bungalow building may have lost your privacy. But, for example, in this block of building, the garage over here blocked over 80%
of the back of this house bungalow. This one here, maybe about 70%. Over here, same thing, about 80%, and that one's probably...
So hang on, I'm sorry. So you're saying the garage that they have on Ainslie for those particular houses blocks the view own, you're saying of
back,
the duplex?
Their own back of their own dwellings. Now, duplexes that we're proposing...
How many people have garages there? Is it...
A majority of them, if you look at this street, the structure we're in, 1, 2, 3, 4, don't have it.
Okay.
A similar statistic will happen to the redesign. Now, with regard to building height for duplexes, even going into a single-family lot, the R15, you are allowed to go up to 35 feet. So, like, if someone come back to your back or adjacent to your property want to do a duplex, they're allowed. It's a permitted height. We're not varying the height. We're not varying the yard setback.
They don't have to go through any processes.
They don't have to. They just go and pick up their permit and build the houses. All right?
Did you have a question, Councilor?
I will. Them all at the same time.
Okay. Well, with regard to the community involvement, I think the developer have done more than what the usual application will take place. Most of the applications that we have seen is up to about 3 meetings. Whether it's to certain group satisfaction or not, that's really a desirable thing. You know, that's, we can go on and on for this consultation process, and this will sit like a potato field forever, because development has a time constraint to it. There is a time constraint imposed on the application or the development process. With regard to the traffic, I'll have Wayne comment on the number of traffic gained and the last comment about why traffic's increasing.
I guess during the course of there, I took down four points that were being considered. One of them was a comment about the Saturday counts. Now, Saturday counts are normally a special consideration. We're looking at traffic operations during the weekday, AM peak period. Saturday counts are not typically completed by the City of Winnipeg in and around residential communities. So nobody has the information to look at to do that. Although I could generate traffic based on the pre and post development. For purposes of this report, it was only AM and PM peak considered, as well as the 24-hour weekday. There's a comment raised about stop signs and turn restrictions. During the course of this, I'll not mention specifically, I did a very cursory review of the warrants analysis for stop signs. Lodge Street is a local residential street. It has many accesses to it, cul-de-sac, private drive, back lanes, what have you. There's no, it doesn't meet any criteria for a four-way stop or light. So maintaining the stop to Lodge Avenue will provide adequate intersection operations at both the eastern and the western accesses to the subdivision. The other one was about the condition of the street with on Lodge Avenue, which I would presume that is beyond the scope of this subdivision. It's a maintenance item that should depend on public work. I agree there is, you can visualize some time in that there. But I personally work in the field, and it's not the responsibility of the developer to review or conduct a survey of the on-street as part of the maintenance. And the other one was about the net or the increase in traffic because of the school closure. And I want to make sure this is put in the correct context. If the school was still in operation, I mentioned some numbers before, and I'll just use a daily total, a weekday daily total, if I may. If this school was in full operation as it was up until a couple of years ago, again, it would generate 1,600 trips per day. And that's based on an industry-accepted trip generation technique. And when I contacted St. James' Assiniboia, they did not have driveway counts on both the back lane or, well, I guess, sorry, not on back lane or intersections in and around there. And nor does the city of Winnipeg. Again, it's local residential streets. They don't typically do that in a special class. So again, if I may, if this school was in full operation, we'd be generating, what, 1,800 trips per day. Under the redevelopment, we're generating half that traffic, approximately half the traffic, 818. So let's say half the traffic. So intersection operations off-site, as well as the public lane, because remember, we have a parking lot there that has now been stripped away under the redevelopment. So the operations on the back lane, is, you know, we don't have any conflict points, as well as running area intersections on West, Playfield, and Morey. There's a net gain on there. Is it substantial? You will notice a difference if it was, you know, today versus tomorrow. The other thing I'd like to talk to you about that is the background traffic growth. Local background traffic growth is something we do to generate. So it's a natural growth based on, you know, historical growth in this city. So although 20 years ago you'd have a street carrying X vehicles, compound annual growth rate that we use for our calculation to generate a projection 20 to 30 years from now. So, and I've heard that before too, is that the traffic's always been increasing. Well, yes, it will. There's an actual background growth rate that'll happen. But it'll be offset because we're taking 1,600 vehicles a day on the school and reducing it down to 800 with the retail. I believe that was the items that were brought up.
So if I hear what you're saying, there's one gentleman had mentioned that he, you know, did believe that there was increased traffic flows within the street. I know there has been this Shoppers Drug Mart that has been developed over the last 5 or 6 years. Right. So if I hear what you're saying, what your traffic count looked at was kind of historical trends in terms of... Okay.
Again, it's on
that. I'm not a traffic engineer. Is that a standardized in your practice to do? Like, is that a standardized procedure?
It's regional, but for Winnipeg, for this area, it is background traffic will occur nationally at the time. Area development. You get much more specific if you're talking about this, you know, the development just immediately south. The further you get away, the less impact it has on the street system.
Okay. Anything else to add to some of the questions and concerns that were brought up? So that deals with the traffic issue, your responses. Do either gentlemen have any questions, or you're waiting to the end, Councillor Clement? Is that...
Is that responding? And then we usually get to ask some other questions. So sure.
I just got one more question architecturally to comment on, and I'll ask Garth to comment on the very last question about the value of the houses. There was a comment about the building height, concern about the building height. Is there something we can do? I think we have done something here, as demonstrated by the color rendering over here. We've gone with a flat roof rather than a pitch roof. A pitch roof will appear to be even higher, a taller building, because the building height is measured the median of the slope roof. So if I take it to the center of the slope, that's 40 feet I'm allowed based on the bylaw. In this case, we're taking 40 feet right down to the roof. We're not going up with a slope roof with the other half.
It's a flat
roof
as opposed to regular houses.
So we are taking a little bit more an expensive approach in terms of the architectural aspect.
Is that a change from the initial plan that you brought forward?
No, it has always been trying to minimize the building height. That has always been the attempt.
That deals with the question of 40 feet for four stories, as opposed to a regular house. If you're allowed to build up to 35 feet for it, you know, a normal house would probably be two stories.
I'll ask Garth to comment on the resale value.
I also want to make a comment in response to a question, I believe, from Mr. Patterson about the initial survey and so forth, because I think that Patterson is correct. There was information that was asked for on the surveys relative to number of bedrooms you wanted in square footage. And it was totally logical. The reason for it is we can't come up with a proposal like this unless we know what it is that's being requested in the area. There was, however, on every survey, ample opportunity to write on the bottom additional comments, so people that simply didn't want anything to happen could do that. The other thing I would like to emphasize is that to ensure total transparency, we gave to Mr. Yock a total compilation of absolutely everything that came in. And as a result of these the responses on those surveys, that's the way we address the particular issues that you've seen here in the evolution of this plan. The other thing I think that is very important to point out, Mr. Chairman, is that there is no traffic access to either of these back lanes. The entry and exit to this particular development is at the lodge. Those back lanes currently have speed humps in them, and I'm assuming they came as traffic calming measures because of the school traffic that was there. When there were schools there. That's right, and it was an excellent idea. The second and third stories of that building, I dare say that there were times when people were in the school looking out, engaging out, they were able to look into people's yard. That's part and parcel of living in an area where something can be two stories. My last comment is relative to Mrs. Patterson's question, and I think it's absolutely critical. How is this going to affect the valuation of neighboring properties? This was a question that we were asked, Mr. Chairman, in one of the earlier meetings. We gave everyone the name of the head of assessment, the director of assessment, Mr. Karpa, and suggested that they contact Mr. Karpa. There is absolutely nothing that will substantiate a diminution in value. As a matter of fact, quite the reverse. There's very much an analogous situation to what we're speaking of here. In River Heights, it was a 5-acre school site for a Moss school, and that was a standard concern from area residents, is you will devalue my property. Absolutely the reverse occurs, and there's a logical reason for it. The new buildings that are going in here are brand new, they're architecturally pleasing, they're energy efficient, they're brand new models. So as a result, in many instances, they sell at comparable rates to the houses in there or slightly more. They don't pull values down, they raise values. The people that are coming in here and spending good dollars to come into your neighborhoods are going to be exceedingly good neighbors. They're going to be people that want to live in St. James, and as a result, they are making major investments to be part of your communities. But I want to reiterate that there is absolutely no example that the assessment department will give you where there has been a devaluation in property because of a new infill, particularly one of this quality.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Steak. Now, is there any questions? Councillor Clement, I think you were chomping at the bit there to... some questions.
I wasn't overly excited, but I guess it would be fair based on what I think I'd like to raise it well here and can respond as opposed to using it as a sum up after type of thing. The chairman has suggested to a couple people tonight that discussing the provincial government and the school division isn't appropriate, but. I think it's appropriate to say this, that if the rules are that the school division isn't allowed to apply for a rezoning, then somebody should be looking at that, I think, because I think that the problem with a process like this is that the development company comes out and makes their best efforts to go through this type of a process, but they're doing it based on what they have to pay for the land. And that was decided at a meeting of the school board and subsequently by the province. And it would be, I think, a better process is it would be if the school division had to make this type of an application instead of the development company. And then once it would be approved, they would then know what they had to sell. And then they would get a little bit, maybe a little lower price for their land, but well, it's not necessary, but that's what I think. And because these processes are never fun for us or developers or for the residents, and I think that would have been a better way to do it. I guess I have to point out, and you know, we'll do it so we can dialogue. Mr. Wan, I think, quoted the bylaw twice, but the fact of the matter is that this land isn't rezoned yet, so there is no bylaw associated with this plan. I think it's fair.
Yep.
Okay.
Fair comment.
All right. And it goes further where if this land was being or the request was to rezone it residential, similar to the street across from it, then it would be true that the residences on it, or that would be allowed on it, would generally be allowed to have a 35-foot height. However, once again, this land isn't yet zoned, and therefore the height and style of the homes can be declared at this meeting, as an example. Mm-hmm. In other words, we can dictate that those periphery houses be single-family condos, even if they're adjoining. They're still, or single-story. I mean, even if they're adjoined, as an example, which is a possibility. So I just thought I'd throw that out. The things that jump out to me, and I appreciate that there's been some timing issues in terms of the changes back and forth, and in fairness, we know that drawing isn't going to be the final drawing either, because we already heard today, and I know I saw an email on my computer 2 days ago, that the fire department now wants to see some changes to the interior road system, so that it has to change somewhat.
Yes.
I think that's fair, and I think everybody understands that. Just exactly what that is, I don't know, although I look at the drawing that was in this document, and it shows a road going through between the two big buildings as opposed to a plaza there. And, I mean, that's all the subjective stuff, but that might work without the hammerhead or whatever. Maybe the hammerhead works better. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll consult with the
drawings.
We'll consult with the departments.
But once again, we don't have them, which is unfortunate, and it's just all about timing. Things that bother me, I'd like to point something out, Councillor Fielding. I could be wrong, but I don't think I heard one single person tonight, at least, mention the height of the two larger buildings. I don't think I heard that from anybody here tonight. And I do have a question related to those buildings, because the parking under those buildings, I'm assuming it's enclosed parking.
Yeah, they all inside this stretch here.
But sometimes they're not, Ray, on the main level. They could be open. But these are at-grade access.
Enclosed.
And it's enclosed. Okay.
Yes. It's like underground parking, but it brought up back to on-grade.
I'm pretty sure that underground parking about 5 years ago was worth about $16,000 a stall. $16,000 to $19,000 a stall. I don't know what it is now. I'm sure it's a little more than that. It's $55,000.
Okay. Open air parking deck is about $25,000 per stall. Underground is about $55,000.
Okay.
That's last year number.
Yeah, because so to create the underground parking for 42 spaces is about $2 million bucks. Is that right? And for two buildings, it would be about $4 million, which is a bit of a problem because it's a lot of money, and I understand what you're doing. So it's probably not economical to go into the ground to do that, although I can tell you that the building that Joe Bova built on Ferry Road, he did do that, and they had a lineup around the block to buy them because they were, in fact, heated underground parking spaces, similar to the Courts of St. James, which is sold out all the time.
Yeah, we did the same thing, a recent project, also an infill housing project on River and Lion in Wildwood Park.
Yeah.
Same concept as this.
Yeah.
Indoor heated parking, enclosed. Your neighbor are not looking at parking lot.
Yeah.
And lights are not shining out. You can run your vehicle inside a garage.
In any case, that may economically, based on what the cost of property is and what those costs would be, may not work. But if I could redraw that right there, I would probably redraw it using single-story residential along those back lanes, and they could be detached bungalows, or whatever you want to call them. I think that's what they would call them. Or not detached. They'd have to be attached condos. I'm not sure what the numbers would be, but to get them to be the proper square footage. And I appreciate once again, and this was something that Noah's using, I guess, but you can say that the north is the front and the south is the back and the east and the west is the side yards, except we haven't rezoned it yet. And it seems to me that if somebody's going to have a backyard, that most people would like to have a reasonable sized backyard. In any subdivision that we're going to see, whether it's in Waverly West, Lindenwood, White Ridge, they're all 25-foot rear yards. And I think there's space to create that, and to do it. To be honest, now that those two buildings are interior, you could. That's why I counted them. I think there's 10 on each side. Even if they were single family condos, not attached, you'd lose 20 units. If you added a floor to those two other buildings and went four stories, you'd gain 28.
It is four-story.
Pardon me?
Bill, it is.
Well,
it is
four five story. Then I meant.
Five-story.
Yeah. You'd get 28, and you'd be able to create the rear yards because there is room to tinker with exactly where those buildings are. You don't need 20 feet of boulevard in front of them necessarily. You could probably at least pick up 5 feet on each side there, and probably pick up five in the middle as well, particularly if you're going to do it as a plaza. Then you've got your 25-foot rear yards. You've got eight more units than you'd have on that drawing, and you'd have bungalows which are identical to what's on Rita and Ainslie, which is consistent with the neighborhood. And there you go. And the only issue is one more story on those upper or those bigger buildings going to create a kerfuffle? So far tonight, like I said, I never heard one person mention the height of those two big buildings. Everybody that's talked about height has talked about the buildings of the existing home or the newer single-family homes or whatever you want to call them that back onto them. So if I had to play God, that's what I'd do. Yeah, sure. I'd like to hear response, because that's why I did it,
as
opposed to saying it to you later.
No,
I'd kind of like to hear what you say about some of those things.
Yeah. I think another way of meeting you in the middle ground here, accomplishing a greater setback, but yet allow the similar ratio in terms of variety of products on site is the variety of products that we would like to achieve here, based on the survey that identify what a potential market can demand, is revisit the yards to the four-story building and increase the yard for the duplexes along the back lane. Because, like you said earlier, while I was doing my first round of public
representation. Sorry, can you say it again,
Ray? Maybe I'll do this. One way of doing it is to reduce the yard over here, move the rollway, basically stretch the entire group over to increase the yard along the back lane on both sides. Mm-hmm. But yet, the developer maintained the similar ratio and mix of housing type that are in responsive to survey that we have got from the November meeting, or October, the first meeting.
Well, that solves a setback problem, but it doesn't necessarily solve the problem of them looking down into their rear yards of their bungalows. That's the only...
The layout of duplexes, the back side, I hate to use the front or back, but the west side of the duplexes are literally your bedrooms. Your living quarters is down on the main floor. What do? Go to your bedroom. You're ready to go to bed. You don't go and sit there and stare at windows and look at your neighbors. I don't. No, it's facts of life. Like, you have most likely the bungalow over here along the backside, most likely will be bedrooms, and similar function will be happening on the backside of the building, back in the backside. It's not an area that you have an active zone, like i.e. a kitchen, a patio, a balcony, on the second floor, that people are having a beer and say, hey, look at my neighbor.
Well, you know, it's going to sound self-serving, but, you know, when I look out my bedroom window, I look down at my pool, it's not facing my neighbor.
And another thing, what this concept...
Not that I think anybody here is going to put one in.
Secretly, inside, we do have a wall of feature. But no, like along here on the new duplexes, one bonus feature is the parking is at the front. It's not at the back.
I know.
And we do, in a sense, compared to most of the neighbor, it does offer more yards. Yards, open space, not garages. Right? And keep in mind, there's not 15 feet. If we move this thing over, say, hypothetically, say, if I can improve it up to, say, 20 feet or 22 feet or so, I have to work out the turning radius and so on.
Turning radius where?
Over here for the fire truck to come through. This process, the fire truck that goes through.
22 instead of 15, you're saying?
Let's say 22 feet instead of 15 feet. I'm using a number.
Is the distance that's in between those two big buildings on that drawing different than this one here?
Similar. Well, this one is like this and that was straight.
But this one looks like you could get a fire truck through there.
Yeah, they should be able to.
Without doing that.
I'm suggesting is to take out the yard over here.
Well, if you had a 10-foot yard on that side of the street on both sides. You got 20 feet on both sides of the street. I asked you that before, and you got a 27-foot street. No, in interior.
Over here.
Okay.
Over here.
So if you made the two inside boulevards 10 feet, as opposed to 20-foot boulevards,
yeah, 10 feet.
Then you can move everything in and change
doable.
The setback.
I think it's doable.
And all I like in a typical residential subdivision, that would be a 25-foot setback, because it's being rezoned. What do you call it? Multiple something with what some letter, whatever it is,
because it's a condo plan, it needs to have.
Because everything's changed now, and I can't. Yeah. You know, there's so many categories now that, then at least it would be consistent with what other residential would be.
I think that's a possible solution instead of changing product mix, because the product mix is really what we're guiding to follow what the survey is telling us.
The only other comment I'll make, well, it's not really to do with them, but I guess it's just something to look at. But my recollection is that shopping center that's currently south of the Sturgeon Creek Community Center has a break in it, and that break allows people to drive to the back lane.
There's two breaks.
It allows people to drive to the back lane. And not that I think that anybody in this neighborhood necessarily drinks or anything, but there's a liquor commission there, and there's a Boston Pizza. Dry cleaning, yeah, and also and a drugstore. And those people are the ones, I think, that are zipping through the back lane because they don't want to go out on the Portage Avenue and make U-turns and go up Moray and everything else. They want to go back into their neighborhood. And I would bet you that if we charted everybody coming in and out of that back lane, that the traffic that one gentleman, I think his name was Mr. Malcolm, was talking about, because he said there's excess traffic on those streets, nothing to do with the high school. It's likely they're coming from that shopping center, I would think. And the trouble with trying to put directional signs is then you screw up the whole community center. Mm-hmm. So it's not an easy one to fix. And I don't think it's germane to this issue, to be honest with you. But I don't know. Just a thought from the other side of the river. Observation.
Bill's world.
Councilor Norman, did you have any comments or questions for...
My question is, and I asked about the fencing, whether it's 15 or 22 or 25 feet, will the condo association be responsible for the maintenance of that green space on the two sides? The individual residents are not going to be cutting their own grass back there. Yes or no?
Every condo association has its own set of rules. It's a case of that's something that's reviewed. It'll be part and parcel of the maintenance package for the entirety of the program.
So there's not going to be garden sheds back there and Quonset huts and
six. No. I think the other thing, with all due respect to Councillor Clement as well, whether a backyard is 15 or expanded to 25. This is an exceedingly rare situation where there's a 7.5-acre green space immediately next door to you. And I dare say a lot of people will want to take advantage of that as opposed to being in a backyard.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Any further questions before they go? Nothing right now. Well, I've kind of asked them throughout the way.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Thank you.
Councilor Clement, I'm not sure if you'd like to take the chair. I'm ready to move motion on this.
Okay, just hang on. Let me get to
this. It's on page 4.
Back here. What we're talking about? Okay. Councillor Fielding.
Okay, I'd like to move the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read.
All in favor, opposed, carried.
Aye. The receipt of public representation be concluded.
All in favor, opposed, carried.
Aye.